Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We have reached the halfway point, the, you know, metaphorical halfway point. We're way past the halfway point, but it is the All-Star break, and the Milwaukee Brewers, not going to sugarcoat it anymore. It wasn't a great first half. It was fine. It was okay. There's some things to hang your hat on, and some great moments, some good roster moves, some things that worked out. But being just three games above 500, definitely not where I'm sure Brewers fans thought they were going to be heading into the All-Star game. Still, let's chat about it. We're going to look back at the first half. We've got kind of a special episode planned for you. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. And normally, I'm joined by Tom Hodricourt, Todd Rosiak, reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who've covered the Brewers all year long. But I'm going to give them a break this week. We're going to take a look back at the first half of the season. I'm going to be joined by one of my other colleagues at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Kurt Hoge, and we're going to take a look at some of the biggest things that you may remember from the first half. We're going to look at the best wins of the first half, the toughest losses, the best singular performances, whether that's, you know, big offense, big pitching performances, typically in one game, the best sort of single moment of the season, and then also a moment of weirdness. We'll wrap it up. We'll do our top four in each of those categories, throughout some honorable mentions as well. But moment of weirdness, a fun way to end that. So I think you'll enjoy the conversation looking back at the first half, even though I know that right now you're probably a little down on the Milwaukee Brewers. They went 2-5 in the final week of the first half. They ended up losing 3-4 in Cincinnati and dropping 2-3 against Pittsburgh. They won the series openers in both cases, and then floundered thereafter. And even the win, they've lost 5 of 6 games. Even that win on Friday night was just awful for Brewers fans, I'm sure, where the Brewers gave up 5 runs in the 9th. They lost a 6-1 lead. They did win in extras. It was a big win when all was said and done. Lorenzo Cain with the go-ahead single. But still, I know that a lot of nails bitten, a lot of swear words uttered at TV screens as the Brewers continue to just really struggle. The Brewers will head into the All-Star break with a 47-44 overall record, 47-44. They've gone 2-5 in July after going 13-13 in June, which doesn't sound that bad, but it was a pretty front-loaded month since splitting in Houston. And we'll talk about that Houston series. A couple moments will come up on my chat with Kurt Hoge. But since splitting 2 games with Houston, they've gone 8-15, and that has included a couple series against last-place teams. Cincinnati at the time was last place, San Diego was second to last, but San Francisco was a last place team, Seattle a last place team, and the Brewers lost all of those series. So it's been a frustrating run. They've played teams that you would think, the Brewers being a team that came into the year with big expectations, went to the NLCS last year, would be favored against some of these lower tier teams. And lower tier can be in quote marks a little bit. This is there's a lot of parity in the National League Central right now, or in the National League in general. So it's not like we're talking about the bottom, you know, the true bottom feeders of the earth. Although a team like Seattle is pretty much out of it. A team like San Francisco is definitely rebuilding. Earlier in June, it was Miami losing 2 of 3 against the Marlins, who are unquestionably one of the bottom teams in the National League, if not clearly the bottom team. So this has been a really big missed opportunity in June. And I think if you asked anybody, they would not be happy with 3 games over 500 at the break. The Brewers were 55-43 at last year at the All-Star break, and that was after they had lost 6 straight games, a terrible series in Pittsburgh, a 5-game sweep. There was a rain makeup in there, so a 5-game sweep going to the All-Star break, and still they were 12 games over 500 and had a 3-game lead in the division. They ultimately lost 10-13, and after that they still held the lead. In 2017, same thing. They were up 9 games over 500 at the All-Star break, 5.5 up in first place. They did end up losing 11-14 thereafter, and we're still in first place thereafter because they had such a big lead. Obviously, the Brewers do not have the luxury of going on a big losing streak this time around, but there are a few things that you have to also take into consideration. That National League Central is kind of still anybody's game. As bad as the Brewers have been, the Cubs are just 47-43, a half game ahead of the Brewers. Again, the Brewers are 47-44. They're a game and a half ahead of the Cardinals, who are squarely at 500 at 44-44. The Pirates are a game under 500. The Reds are 41-46, and they've got this crazy good run differential, but they have not been able to translate that into wins. So the Brewers, standings-wise, still can't feel bad about where they are. It should kind of go without saying that any team that gets into the playoffs can make, it's been proven over time, can win the World Series. You don't have to be one of the surefire best regular season teams to have a really good chance at winning the World Series. And the Brewers are still in that mix. So in that sense, you got to feel kind of good about where they are, but obviously it's they have a very poor run differential. They have a negative run differential. They don't look like a team that's going to be playoff bound. And the only thing you could say is they're in good spot. The trade deadline is right around the corner. The Brewers could improve themselves, and you honestly just cannot predict which team is going to get on a run. It could very easily be the Milwaukee Brewers, and the Chicago Cubs certainly will be the favorites because they have the talent, but right now they do not have a big lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. That's those are the talking points, the plot lines. Now let's get into some of the nitty-gritty with Kurt Hoge and look at some of the, again, the best wins, best losses, weirdest moments, best singular performances. Let's check it out as I bring in my guy Kurt. Here he is now, my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Kurt Hoge, fellow Brewers aficionado. You can read him at jsonline.com, primarily covering prep sports for Preps Plus at jsonline.com. But today, we are bringing him in as a Brewers enthusiast. Kurt, it has been it's been a rough road through the month of June and into July. Where are your spirits? Are you hanging in there, Kurt?
I think everyone needs the All-Star break. It's similar to last year too. The All-Star break came at a fantastic time because, yes, it's things are not going well for the local nine, JR.
No, it's been a tough first half of the season, officially in the category of, as I said in the intro, officially, I think it's a disappointing first half. They are, you know, within a half game of first place. Their best player is still their best player, is a superstar, and their offseason moves that they made worked out great, but there's still a few things, many, many things that have not gone well. So we're going to run down the first half and kind of look at it. We're going to each take, as I explained, we'll each take two things in each of our five categories, and we'll make a sort of a top four, and then we'll throw in a few honorable mentions at the end. So we're going to start with some catharsis. We're going to go with worst loss of the year. I said this sort of at the outset in a couple places that last year's team got kind of, I don't want to say lucky, but last year's team won a lot of games that they weren't supposed to win, that they sort of stole. And even though there were a couple memorable losses, there were really only a couple losses that were truly bad losses. Unfortunately, this year, there are many losses that are bad losses. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to kick this off with the number one. I'll have you give your number one worst loss of the year. And then I will offer number two. You do number three. I'll do number four. So for starters, Kurt, kick us off. There are a few to choose from. Which loss do you say is the worst loss of the year so far?
Well, thanks for letting me be the tip of the spear on the bad news, of which there's much to report. It is interesting that we are recording this on the day of one of the few terrible, terrible losses last year. Not the exact date to the day, but the final Sunday before the All-Star game in Pittsburgh. You remember it. I remember it. Everyone remembers it.
The
it was
worst
a bad
loss
time.
Of 2018 was the last time.
That was
the
All-Star worst
break.
Loss. And the second worst was the Padres loss where Knebel gave up like five or six in the ninth.
And both of those are vivid memories for me. But like I said, there just weren't many like that. There was nothing like those two. Yeah. I remember them vividly, but they did not make a habit of that stuff.
So I'm not sure if they have anything that's gotten that bad quite yet this year. Friday's win would have been by far number one, but they pulled that one out. I'm sure I'll get to that later. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to start with, I guess we're picking a couple each. So I'll start with July 2nd, very recently. I don't know if it's recency bias, but the loss to the Reds on the walk-off single to right field where Puig scores from first on a bad 0-2 pitch. Christian Yelich kind of, I don't want to say he lollipopped the ball into the infield, but he missed a couple cutoff men. Eric Thames lets the throw get by, and Puig scores from first on a single to right. And this was after the Brewers blew a lead in the eighth inning, I believe it was. So, yeah, not a great time.
That was indeed a bad loss. And the 0-2 pitch that I remember, I don't remember what the count was on the actual hit that won the game, but Puig was down 0-2, had swung at two terrible breaking, like just terrible swings on great breaking pitches from Corbin Burns. And then Burns throws one right over the plate that Puig singles, you know, sharply on. And then he's on first base with two outs when this disastrous shot down the line turns into it was a bad throw by Christian Yelich, a bad attempt at a catch by Eric Thames. It was a really ugly, gruesome way to finish off that loss against the Reds. That was just on Tuesday. That was tough. My personal number one, we'll have it two for our purposes. Ranked number two, though, goes back to May 11th. The Cubs, a 2-1 loss in 15 innings. Wilson Contreras hits a walk-off home run in Wrigley Field. It was just a field day for offensive struggles. I mean, to put it, the game went 15 innings. It didn't even go that slowly because nobody was getting on base for the Brewers. It was just ineffective offense at its finest. And that's sort of been a theme this year. The Brewers offense just has not clicked, and it clicked the least that May 11th game when they had a chance to put a hurt on the Cubs and wound up losing in 15 innings. Very tough.
And when they did get on base, they hit into double plays.
Yes, that was the game where there were
10. I believe there were 10 in that game.
Yeah, between the two teams, major league record, I believe, 10 double plays. And the Brewers, I believe, hit 6 of them, but I'm doing that off the top of my head. Not sure if that's right.
Yeah, so for my second one, this one had far less drama than every other possible bad loss.
I know where
you're
going with
this. In fact, there's no drama, yes. But when you lose 16-0, JR, to the worst team in the National League. They were at the time one of the worst teams in baseball, although they were playing better at that time. But still, you lose 16-0 to the Miami Marlins. That is not a good time for the Brewers. And the sheer embarrassment level on that has to make me put it in my top two. It was a bad game that I'm sure most people turned off and didn't leave you with as bad of a taste maybe as like that Reds game or that Cubs game, but not fun.
Yeah, that was on June 4th. It was very much embarrassing. The Brewers lost 2 of 3 against the Marlins, the clear-cut last place team, worst team in the National League. And that 16-0 loss was definitely a tough one. You look at their run differential, how poor it has been this year, despite their relatively lofty perch in the standings. And I think a lot of people go back to that game. Well, they lost, you know, the run differential took a major hit there. They've had a couple other games like that, but that one is certainly the ugliest scar, I guess, on the overall ledger there, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
I'm going to go a different direction with my fourth one. It was a game in June as well, June 15th against the Giants, because it was a bad loss, but also emblematic of one of the more disappointing storylines of the season thus far. Brewers took a 4-0 lead. They led 5-1 against the Giants, but ultimately lost. They lost the lead in the fifth when they issued 4 straight walks. Jimmy Nelson, that was his second start. His comeback has not gone well. It appears he has not battled his way back from shoulder injury or is just ineffective, you know, over the course of his 21-month rehab. Things just went south for him, and that was definitely the game where you realized it's probably going to be an unhappy ending for the Jimmy Nelson experience. Adrian Hauser came in and walked in a run. They still had a lead later on in the game. Junior Guerra was pitching. Christian Yelich had a bad error. Former Brewer Stephen Vogt, who looked like his career was over, has two triples in the game. And Stephen Vogt, great on him for coming back, but like the dude is not a triples hitter. Anyone who knows Stephen Vogt knows that's true. And it just felt like that really is sort of the heart of this late season or late first half slide is that game right there. It typifies everything that's gone wrong for this.
Yes,
Brewers team.
It's a microcosm of everything that's happened. You know, the offense rallied a couple times. They gave up the lead. The offense got a run back, and then Garrett gives up the lead. And then the Giants get a tack on run, and then Christian Yelich ends up homering off Will Smith, who has been dynamite this year, former Brewer. And in the end, they were just one run short, similar to Sunday's game against the Pirates, one run short. It just happened a fair amount of times this year where it slipped away.
It's true. But let's go to a little bit more positive spin now. We've got that out of our system. Oh, but first, actually, a couple other really bad losses. I don't know if one specifically jumps to mind for me. There is that June 19th game against the Padres when an infield pop-up, Jeremy Jeffress was pitching. He kind of pointed to the sky. Nobody caught it. That run wound up mattering big time when Franmil Reyes hit a home run. 8-7 loss on that one. I'm trying to think what there was a Freddie Freeman walk-off home run against Josh Hader in May that gave the Braves a win. That was another one of those games where the Brewers had a million offensive chances and didn't pull it out. There was also a tough game in April against the Dodgers when Josh Hader gave up a home run to Kike Hernandez on a 2-strike, 2-out pitch. I don't think anybody saw it coming. It was tied at the time, and then Kike untied it. That was a tough loss as well.
Do you remember was that the first hit he had given up with 2 strikes or the first home
run? I believe it was the first home run of any kind that he'd given up with 2 strikes.
Okay, and I believe it was 0-2.
Only 0-2 pitch that he. Well, I don't know if it was any 2-strike pitch, but it was. No, I'm sure it wasn't the only 2-strike, but it was definitely the only 0-2 home run he'd ever given up.
Yes, and probably still has to this date. And then he gave up a homer 2 days later. Yes, but let's move on.
Yes.
Let's just go on.
Talk about some wins. Some wins. So it's my turn to go first this time.
Yes, have at it.
I'm going to go with, I think the biggest win of the year is still is obvious. Honestly, it's still the first game of the season. March 28th against the Cardinals. There was some opening day magic. The thing that everyone will take away was how it ended, the final out. Speaking of Josh Hader, he's on the hill, gives up what looked like was going to be the game-tying home run to Jose Martinez, and Lorenzo Cain comes flying through center field, leaps at the wall, takes away a home run for the final out to give the Brewers a 5-4 victory. Just a very fun start to the season. Obviously, there's a lot of juice in the building. That was at Miller Park coming off of the run to the NLCS last year. March 28th, the highlight so far of the season. They've had
the
other
first day.
They've had other
That's
high
how
points.
This year is going.
But that one was the highest, unfortunately. But
yes, Lorenzo Cain went very high for that high point.
Yeah, he's stolen 3 home runs this year, and actually, I think the one in Shea Stadium was probably Shea Stadium. Whoa, I should say that one is probably the more required the greater amount of talent. But the takeaway on opening day was pretty special.
Yeah, it's about as good as you can get on defense. So there's about 3 that are obviously the next 3 best games to me. I guess it's kind of You're picking at straws now with any of these 3. I'll go with June 1st against the Pirates as my next best win. That was a game when the Brewers led early, and then Brandon Woodruff got roughed up a little bit, and then the Brewers came back to take a lead, and then Josh Hader gives up a home run to Starling Marte. The Pirates retake the lead, but then in the 9th inning, Keston Hira, in his first stint with the team, ties the game in the 9th with a 2-run bomb. Matt Albers steps in a bucket of sassy in the 12th inning, I believe it was. And then later, moments later, Orlando Arcia sends one out in the top of the 13th. Brewers end up winning 12-10. That one could have been one of those worst losses as well, but it ended up being a very interesting game, and it was a good one.
Adorned in Milwaukee Bears uniforms for their annual Negro League tribute. And the Brewers, going into the series before the All-Star break against the Pirates, had an 8-2 record against Pittsburgh. So they finish at, 9-4? Does that sound right?
9-4.
Yeah, so that's not terrible.
So they're 2 under .500 against non-Pittsburgh teams.
Yes, not great. But they have actually done okay against Pittsburgh, and that was, again, Keston Hira was one of the big storylines of the first half. He came through huge in that 9th inning. Did not look like the Brewers had that game after they lost the late lead.
Against Vasquez, yeah, that was the crazy thing. It was the 2 best left-handed relief arms in the game.
They got to Vasquez again on Friday night. I mean, he's devastating, and the Brewers are terrible against lefties this year, but Felipe Vasquez, they have had some success against, oddly enough. Let's go with our number 3 for me. That's May 4th against the Mets. Longest game in Miller Park history. It's 18 innings long. Ryan Braun has not had a great first half, but I got to tell you, every time he stepped to the plate that night, he looked like he was going to do some damage. He was just completely locked in. Hit a double, I think, in the 15th inning, where you just knew it was up against a pitcher who didn't have a lot of experience. You just knew he was going to come through, and he doubled, and they didn't score in that inning. The Mets wind up taking the lead in the top of the 18th, and the Brewers battle back, get the win. Ryan Braun with the walk-off shot down the line. Brewers prevail against the New York Mets. Awesome, awesome game. Everybody was running out of players. They were running out of pitchers, and 18 innings. Again, it was a game that wasn't that long time-wise. It was long, but it wasn't 18 innings worth of time because the Brewers' offense just wasn't doing anything. Neither was the Mets. And then the Brewers came through. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, 6-hit game. That was something else.
Yeah, Ryan Braun, 6-hit game. Yeah, that was probably one of the best. We'll talk about best offensive or best overall performances of the first half, but certainly that one, you got to circle that one.
Yeah, 6 hits, but there was very little offense in that game, even though you had a guy that got 6 hits. It was unique. That game was, here's a question I'll ask you, which one was the better win? Was it that one, or was it the 15-inning game last year against the Pirates? Jordan Lyles walked, and then they got a couple hits to win it after the Pirates had taken the lead.
Very famously, Ryan Braun strikes out for the second out in that game, bringing up Jordan Lyles. No position players left. I like that game better because I just the thing Jordan Lyles not only had to draw a walk to prolong that game. He then winds up scoring the winning run from second base. He had to churn around second base. You don't see a lot of pitchers who are, you know, taking the extra base. But if the thing with that was they were prepared to go into their starting pitchers. Yoli Chacin was prepared to come into that game at some point. It would have thrown off the whole rotation. It would have potentially led to losses down the road. And you know, this is, you know, in August of last year, the Brewers are really hitting their stride. And so to have Arcia end the game when he did, to have Lyles make it all the way around when he did, I don't know what happens if he doesn't. Like, there was some crazy magic worked into that game. I'm going to go with last year's game as the bigger one.
That's I'm awaiting your revisionist history Brewers book.
Oh, yeah. Why not?
The what ifs in Brewers history. So for my next one, I said the couple of them were pretty obvious. And this one is kind of stands out to me as by far the next best win. It was June 12th against the Astros. They struck out 24 times. Justin Verlander was fantastic, but they got three homers on him. Managed to get it to the 14th inning. Josh Hader had a double play, picked off a guy. And then in the 14th, Mike Moustakas hits a ball to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, it is. It's in the ocean.
For a two-run bomb, along with Max Muncy's deposit in the ocean. And then Adrian Hauser, that seemed like it was the game where, as a starter, he hasn't been as good, but that was kind of the game where it seemed like, okay, he might be a guy in this bullpen, and he has been in the bullpen as he came down and got the save in that one, but you know, move him to the starter where he's had less success, but the Brewers like his arsenal in that role. So that was a good win for the Brewers.
The Brewers split two games against the Houston Astros, of course, one of the best teams in the American League, the best at the time. And I can't really imagine a less likely victory than that one. Verlander struck out 14, I believe, career high. He was just dominating, like you said. And Eric Thames' opposite field home run in the seventh inning was such a shock to me because Verlander had just crushed hitter after hitter after hitter. It felt like a 3-2 win was coming for the Astros. Felt like the Brewers had no chance to score again. And then Thames flicks one opposite field. They managed to hold it together. Adrian Hauser's a big part of that. Hold it together all the way to the 14th and then steal a win from the Houston Astros. That was, I think, underappreciated at the time. It was on a Wednesday.
Yeah,
probably didn't stay up late for that. I don't think people understood how crazy of a win that was.
And that's one of the few good moments during this last month plus of Brewers baseball. They've just had a lot of ugly games, bad losses. But that one was a legitimately good win. And that Thames homer, it was a two-strike pitch, and he just somehow pokes it out, and that Astros bullpen does not seem like you're going to score many runs on them when you're trailing late.
All right, let's move on to best singular performance. It can be a particular game, offense or pitching. It can be you could cheat a little bit, a run of games where a player was particularly hot. There's one example that I'm thinking of as I say that out loud. So as we look at the best single performances of the season, what is your number one, Kurt Hoge?
My best singular performance, I'm going to go with, real quick, before I get to this, Jay, I'm going to jump back in time. One I wanted to mention for the best win was just this Friday against the Pirates, because surely on a factor of if you compare what a loss would have been like compared to a win, it was a very, very ugly win, all hell would have broken loose in Brewers verse.
Yeah, well, consider
if they had lost that game.
They've lost five of their last six going into the All-Star game, and that one win where they give up five runs in the ninth to make it extra innings. I mean, that was honestly, like, that was just the precipice of a crushing, crushing loss. And Orlando Arcia, who just seems to always come up big in extra innings, he has a key hit. Lorenzo Cain has the go-ahead single. It was just, honestly, I had chalked that one up to just a devastating loss. I was feeling all the feelings of a devastating loss, and they did.
Yes, yep,
they did survive.
Yes. It was on the cusp of being by far the worst loss of the year, and it turned into a win. So that's an honorable mention for that one.
Note that there was a game May 22nd against the Reds. Brewers were down 6-1. They won 11-9. Yes. A big bounce off the backstop that could have given the Reds a big go-ahead run and turned into a double play. Yasmani Grandal picked it up and got the guy out. That was something. There was also, you know, there have been others. March 31st, Christian Yelich had a walk-off double against the Cardinals to cap that first series of the year. It was pretty good. The Brewers roughed up Jacob deGrom of the Mets at one point, last year's Cy Young winner. So they've had some other pretty good ones as well.
Yes. So going on to the best singular performance, I will take the reigning MVP, Christian Yelich. He had the game of the year so far when he hit three homers against the Cardinals on April 15th. Made a very spectacular diving catch. I believe it might have saved a run or saved a big inning or something along those lines, if I'm remembering that correctly. And he also delivered a dog to a family before the game. Quite a day for Christian Yelich.
I think we could probably say Christian Yelich's first half of the season counts as the best singular performance. 31 home runs, leading the league, although barely. Cody Bellinger and Pete Alonso are right there now, both 30 home run hitters in their own right. But Yelich was tremendous, hit a home run in each of the first four games of the season. And then that included March 31st, what we just talked about, where he ended up finishing the game with a walk-off double. Not bad. Not a bad first series. And I don't remember all the specifics on the dog. I believe it was the third game of the season where a family had a sign that said, "Hey, Yelich, if you hit another home run, my dad will buy me a puppy." And of course, sure enough, Christian Yelich did in his first at-bat. The family immediately became sort of a viral sensation. The Brewers tweeted out the picture. I went and talked to the family to make sure we got a story on them. And then the Brewers invited them back, and Christian Yelich hand-delivered a puppy to the little girls in the family. The family was able to sort of pick out the puppy beforehand, but they got this new dog, and Yelich brought it to them during batting practice. So that was sort of – and then he goes out and hits three homers that night. What a month of April for Christian Yelich. What a first half of the season.
Yeah. What would it take for Christian Yelich to deliver a puppy to me?
I'm
just going to throw that out there. No,
you're going to have to be way cuter, like way younger and way cuter. And I'm not sure that's going to work for you, man. That's not happening.
Yeah. I got both those things going against me.
It's true. It's true. My number one, but for this purpose, number two, best performance, Brandon Woodruff. And I feel like this was underappreciated in the moment as well. On May 26th, he throws a one-hit – it's not a one-hitter because it's over eight innings, but it ends up being the first one-hitter for the Brewers since 2008 when CeCe Sabathia allegedly gave up one hit in Pittsburgh. He goes eight innings, 10 strikeouts, allows one hit, no walks, certainly emblematic of his first half where he has emerged as the ace of the staff. He's an all-star, it isn't coming out of nowhere, but it is far beyond expectations. And that outing was just about as good as anything he could have possibly delivered. Very impressive from Brandon Woodruff.
I'm very glad that you said allegedly on the CeCe Sabathia no-hitter.
Yes.
I feel like I've been on the podcast like four or five times now, and this is probably like the third time that we've talked about that CeCe Sabathia game.
We're not over it. Who's over that?
Bill Schrader definitely is not over it either.
Yeah, that was outrageous. Now, I believe Jack Sorensic, former Brewers farm director, is now one of the official scorers in Pittsburgh. He would have called that an error.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was.
It was an error.
It was an error.
100%. We are not over it. This podcast is not over the 2008 one-hitter.
This podcast is very, very pro 2008 Brewers.
Yes, that's true. By the way, that game was against the Phillies. I don't know if I mentioned that. A 9-1 win for the Brewers.
Who hit the homer? Was that Andrew Knapp? That homered off Woodruff?
Oh, that is a phenomenal question. I don't remember. I know it was somebody I had never heard of who hit the one shot.
Yeah.
The one hit was a home run. And I'm looking it up, so you can keep talking. But that was fascinating. The one hit ends up being a massive home run.
Well, since you will look that up, I will talk about another eight-inning gem delivered. This one was delivered very early in the year when the Brewers were off to a really hot start. Freddy Peralta, he got roughed up in his first start against the Cardinals and then comes back on the road in the final game of the series in Cincinnati. Goes eight innings, no walks. Two hits, 11 strikeouts. So Freddy Peralta striking out 11 and walking none, giving up no runs. There was a lot of hype around him at that point. There was a big at bat in that game where Yasiel Puig came up in the eighth as the go-ahead run, and there was a long at bat. And by that time, we didn't have the full history of Yasiel Puig just destroying the Brewers this year. So there's that narrative gets added to it after the fact, but. Just really an incredible performance, and they needed every ounce of it because they won by one.
Yeah, 1-0 win.
And who got JR? Who got the save in that one?
Oh, Kurt, I don't know. April 3rd.
It was Alex Wilson.
What? You're right. I remember that. Alex Wilson had a couple pretty good outings. Oh man, have I already forgotten about Alex Wilson? I think I have. And I spoke to him in the clubhouse. I talked to the guy.
Some of us will never forget you, Alex Wilson.
it turned sour after that. But Alex Wilson, very with fast. His high socks, did get the save in that 1-0 game. Totally arguable that that's the bigger outing. I mean, Brandon Woodruff only allowed one hit, but Freddie had just Freddie allowed just two hits, had one more strikeout, no walks, and actually is having a very good year when it comes to control. He's not walking a lot of people, and the Brewers won the game 1-0. That was very impressive, man. The Brewers started this year 8-2, and things were looking so good. They were so good,
very good
through the first 10 games. Crazy how things have turned, but that's a really good one. You know, I'm not going to go with Ryan Braun. Six hits, two doubles, game-winning hit on May 4th because we discussed it already. But you could certainly make the case that is on this list. I'm going to go with Josh Hader, and there's a couple I could choose from, but I'm going to go with the more fun achievement, and that's his immaculate inning March 30th, again against that Cardinals series, where he struck out the side on nine pitches. Through nine pitches, all strikes, struck out three batters. That is an immaculate inning. It has happened before in Brewers history. It has happened. Rick Helling, of all people, is on that list. It is not the rarest of achievements, but it is still rare enough that it hasn't happened in a few years, and that's a pretty cool thing. He also, Josh Hader, had a great outing April 26th, where he got five strikeouts and a ground out through the final two innings, 20 pitches to get the save in that one. We've talked about some of the home runs Hader's given up, but he's been pretty special this year. He's done some really amazing things for the Brewers.
Yeah, he's been as good as he... I mean, that first half he had last year was incredible, but he's been just about as good this year. And also, you referred to Rick Helling incorrectly. You got to call him 20-game winner Rick Helling.
Yes.
For future
references.
If he had
references. Done it with the Brewers, I would have given him that credit, yes. But I will not do that at this time.
So we both just gave two for that one, right? We both each gave our...
Yes, we're done. And so okay. A couple others, if you wanted to throw them in. Zach Davies has had a really good outing. A couple, 1 7/2, 1-8 innings that you could put on there. Kind of the sleeper that people, I'm sure, have forgotten about is Taylor Williams, 4 innings of relief in that 18-inning win over the Mets. He allowed one run, 3 hits, no walks, 3 Ks. Taylor Williams' season went very south from there. But that was a huge, huge yeoman effort from Taylor Williams in that win.
Yeah, that's kind of the curveball to throw in there. And the thing with both those Davies outings, those are probably two of his best starts of the year. They're definitely his longest, and they needed to be too, because that was the day after the wins in 18 and 13 innings. So the Brewers' bullpen was completely depleted. They needed length from Davies, and he gave it to them both times, and they ended up winning both games by very small margins. So, gave up 2 runs, I think, in each of those. So Zach Davies has come up big. A couple times when they really needed him.
Brandon Woodruff had a start like that this year, too. The Brewers are no stranger to deep extra innings this year. They have had a few crazy ones, and the starters have actually bounced back really nicely. If only they could go deep in every game, the Brewers might be in a little bit better shape. But let's talk best single play of the year. This is usually defensive play, but could be a big hit, big homer, whatever. Where would you, or is it my turn? I think it's my turn to go first.
You can lead us off.
All right, I'm gonna lead off, but it's gonna be something we've already talked about. It's Lorenzo Cain's game-winning catch on opening day. Again, one of 3 home run thefts that Lorenzo Cain has this year. It has not been a good year offensively for him, although it's been okay the last week or so. Defensively, you cannot find a better center fielder. Give the man a gold glove. Give the man 5 gold gloves retroactively for all the times he should have won the gold glove and was not given it. He is a very special defensive outfielder. Made a pretty bad error over the weekend, but he's still among the greats and made a great catch on opening day, as we discussed.
Yeah, I think we could. I'm gonna have to cheat a little on this because, like, if we're each picking 2 defensive plays, Lorenzo Cain's gonna make up like 3 of those.
It's true. We should maybe just say all of his home run catches.
Yes. So he robbed Todd Frazier of the Mets on April 26th. He robbed one against the Dodgers, I believe, was it?
Yes.
And then he had one that was almost a homer against, I believe, it was Matt Carpenter and the Cardinals in the Yelich 3 homer game. So that's just a couple of amazing plays by Lorenzo Cain. Also saved 3 runs on Friday. Was that the win on Friday?
Yeah, the win on Friday. Great running backhanded catch that saved what would have been a base clearing double.
That would have put the Brewers in a big hole early, and they would not win that game without that play. So congrats, Lorenzo Cain. We're just going to give you 1. We'll give him 1 Lorenzo Cain overall.
Yes. It's like greatness. Christian Yelich on our singular performance. Like, he is the entire first half of Christian Yelich.
So I'm going to go with play between Mike Moustakas and Orlando Arcia against the Reds on June 17th. The Brewers were down 3-0, I believe it was, early in the first. So this play kind of got washed over by the feelings of badness about them. But they went on to win the game. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but Mike Moustakas makes a ranging play up the hole at second base, realizes he's not going to be able to get a throw off, so he flips it to Arcia. The glove flips it to Arcia, who snags it and fires to first to get a pretty speedy runner. Was that Peraza on that play?
I don't remember offhand, but I know that
it might have been Iglesias.
Yes, it might have been. I believe Jose Iglesias. It was a very close play. Orlando Arcia needed to spin to do it, so he receives the pass, and on his way to first, he spins to make sure he gets enough on the throw, and they get it. And I remember Craig Counsell talking about that play after the game. Like, that really gave him momentum because they end up scoring, I believe, a couple runs in the bottom half. And then they, like you said, they go on to win the game. So that was not a bad situation to end the first inning.
Mm-hmm. And this could be another singular performance. The bullpen in that game was phenomenal. I remember Chassin was taken out maybe in the fifth inning. Yeah, and then Matt Albers comes in. And between him and I believe it was Junior Guerra maybe, or Medman Hauser. And then Josh Hader, they gave up no hits as they shut the Reds down the rest of the way.
Retired the final 13 men in order in that game. That was nice at the time. That was they dropped the first two games of that four game series. They win that game. They win the next one. It felt like maybe they were digging out of their the hole that they've built for themselves, or the struggles, the rut they're in, and didn't quite work out that way. But that was a big win. They stole one after going down 3-0.
Yes, I'm hearing in my ear that my producer is telling me that they did not get out of the hole after that game.
Yes, that's true. That is true. I'm sorry. The next one, for me, I'm going to say I got a couple I'm choosing between here, but I'm going to go with the Jeremy Jeffress matrix catch against the Twins on May 27th. An absolute screamer right up through the box. Jeremy Jeffress caught the ball. It was not something he chose to do. It was something, his glove happened to be in the right spot. Jeremy Jeffress very nearly died. I believe they even took him out of the game, not because he was injured. It looked like he kind of contorts himself, kind of going to the ground, hits the deck. They took him out purely precautionary. It turned out afterwards that he wasn't hurt or anything. I don't think it was just like, how do you pitch after your face nearly disappears? So a crazy catch. It's a really fun one. I'm sure you've seen it. And if you haven't, Google it. It won't be hard to find, especially if you throw in the matrix terminology. That's something a lot of people put in there, latched onto. But that was a wild reaction catch on May 27th in Minnesota.
That was probably the coolest play, and probably also the one that had the most literal ramifications for like that for Jeremy Jeffress' health.
Yeah,
if he's 6 inches in the other direction, his face gets hit by a screaming line drive. And then he had another play just like that last Sunday, I believe it was, against the Pirates, where he lost his shoe as well.
Yes, it's crazy.
He knocks the ball down, and oh my gosh, that can't be fun.
Lightning rod. Doesn't sound fun. Jeremy Jeffress, yes. Lightning rod. All right, round out our list.
So that leaves me with this was the same game as that as the Jeffress shoe loss is the one I'm going to take. It was a Ben Gamel leaping aerial catch going back on a ball against the Pirates on June 30th. Jeffress was, I believe, pitching. Yeah, Jeffress was the one that gave up the hit to Dickerson. It was on the Pirates. Deep fly to left. Ben Gamel looks like he has no chance to catch it. And then all of a sudden, somehow, he leaps while running backwards, makes the catch, robs Dickerson of a double. Who knows what would have happened after that. And then, Eric Thames, moments later, hits a homer to give the Brewers the lead. And they hold on. So it was a spectacular play at a very important moment in that game.
Yes, immediately thereafter, that's the top of the eighth, bottom of the eighth, Eric Thames comes up, gives them the solo home run, 2-1 win for the Brewers. I believe Kyle Crick was pitching for the Pirates to give up that that bomb. But that was a great start by Zach Davies on a Sunday, and it was just another one of those really needed wins to win the series, and very important catch by Ben Gamel. I would argue, though, if we're talking Ben Gamel, we've really got to say his inside the park home run should be on this list above that catch. But
yeah,
but we got to acknowledge his defense has been very good. He's been a very good fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I ended up taking that one over the inside the parker because simply the Brewers won. So
that's a good point. They just lose that inside the park game against the Mariners, 3-2. Not great, but Ben Gamel has been a nice addition. Domingo Santana has been very good in Seattle. Probably would not have had the consistent at bats that he has gotten there if he had stayed in Milwaukee. But the trade for Ben Gamel seems to have served both teams very well.
It definitely has. You'll add it to your Brewers revisionist history book, I'm sure.
That's true. Keston Hira, perhaps the home run against the Pirates. We talked about that earlier to tie the game and end up helping the Brewers win. That's probably something that should be on our list. He had a nice sliding stop against the Phillies in May as well. He's a work in progress on defense, but he's made a couple nice plays. So that should be on the list. And maybe that Freddie Peralta strikeout to end the eighth against Yasiel Puig. You talked about that already against the Reds. Just a devastating pitch. to get through 8 shutout innings in that 1-0 win on April 3rd. Again, a great start to this season for the Brewers has evaporated, but it was fun while it lasted.
That was far too stressful of an April 3rd game.
Yeah, I suppose. It was a day game, middle of the week day game. Moment of weirdness. Let's wrap things up with the weird moments of the season so far. There have been many. As is the case with every baseball season, when you always see something you have not seen before. It's your turn here. Lead us off. Tell us what your favorite moment of weirdness has been this season.
My favorite one. I don't know if this was necessarily my favorite, but it felt like the weirdest moment when Christian Yelich hits a double through a gap in the wall in San Francisco. It cost the Brewers a run at the time in a very tight game. They ended up winning. So no harm, no foul. Everyone can laugh about it. But like, how does AT&T Park have a gap bigger than the size of a baseball in its outfield fence?
You know, AT&T and Park, and they had just gone. Had they just gone?
I guess
to
it's
San
not
Diego?
AT&T Park anymore. It's whatever.
Yeah, it's
AT&T
on its fourth
Park.
Name. It's on its fourth name.
We're gonna refer to it about AT&T.
We could call it Pac Bell. It doesn't. It's the San Francisco.
Yeah,
one.
Pac Bell works too.
But they had played in a couple stadiums in a row with really weird outfield fences. I believe actually it was Houston. They had just played at Enron Field. While we're just throwing out old school stadium names, yes. They had just played in Houston. They have weird fields. Their fences played a role in one of the in the loss to Houston. And then you got the San Francisco outfield fences. We saw it even on Sunday in Pittsburgh with their weird fences, perhaps taking a home run away from Yasmani Grandal. So there's weirdness still in the outfield walls, and you're right, he hits an absolute screamer on Father's Day that goes through the wall, and the Brewers could have easily lost that game. They went down in that game, and the run that was you know taken away because Ben Gamel wasn't allowed to score on the ground rule double looked like it was going to loom large. It did not ultimately matter, but that was very strange.
Yeah. It was a weird one.
My favorite moment, weirdness moment, was when Corbin Burnes is warming up in the bullpen at one point.
Yes.
And nobody knew he was on the roster. Corbin Burnes had been sent down. He has been one of the more enigmatic pitchers for the Brewers this season. They tried him as a starter. It did not work out. They put him in the bullpen. He was still struggling. They sent him down to AAA San Antonio. And at one point, it was supposed to be a Chase Anderson start. Chase Anderson had to be scratched with a blister, I believe, right before the start. They had to scramble to try to make things work. And at some point in the game, Corbin Burnes is warming up with the bullpen, and no one has any idea that there's been a roster move, that Corbin Burnes is anywhere near this baseball team. Everyone thinks he's still in San Antonio, and all of a sudden the cameras show this guy. It's like, is that Corbin Burnes? Corbin Burnes is warming up. Nobody knew. So at that point, as he's warming up, it's announced in the press box, oh, by the way, the Brewers put Chase Anderson on the DL right before the game. They got kind of, I don't know if it was a waiver, they got permission from the office to do it really close to game time. They recalled Corbin Burnes. They had put this in motion early enough that he is able to get to the stadium, and then he winds up pitching in the game. That was fascinating. A roster move basically felt like it was made mid-game.
it was truly, truly crazy. I mean, I remember Adam McKelvey, I think, might have been the first one to tweet it out, and he's just like, Corbin Burnes is warming in the bullpen, which is weird because he's not on the active roster. Or he's supposed to be in San Antonio. But, like, yeah, so he was in Milwaukee. I mean, this Chase Anderson injury happened, like, right before the game. Like, minutes before the game. So Corbin Burnes was here, but he wasn't it's just like, why was he even here? They didn't know Chase Anderson was going to get hurt. So it was just a wild, wild series of events, and the Brewers ended up losing, I think, pretty badly, but, you know.
It was explained that they were planning to make a roster move after the game, essentially is what it comes down to, but they hadn't put all the pieces in place yet. They were going to activate Corbin Burnes the next day, but again, they didn't need him yet, or they didn't want it to happen yet, and then when Chase Anderson came down with this blister, they had to act fast. I know for Corbin Burnes, he wasn't expecting to play at all in that game, and it was a tough situation to be in, but a very, very funny moment. You know, I don't even have the date stamp on that. I don't remember which game that was. That had to be.
It was a Rockies game.
I think May is it May 20.
It was April.
Oh, April.
Oh, it might have been May. I want to say it was April though.
Yeah, the Rockies definitely were here in early May and late April. April 29th, 30th, 1st, and 2nd of May. So,
okay, yes,
got to be in one of those games. But
I think it was a series opener there.
Just a wild series of circumstances.
Wild series. Another wild thing that happened was Ryan Braun not going to Canada before the season started for a trip in Toronto because he forgot his passport.
Yes. Got to remember those passports.
So the Brewers played two exhibition games in the preseason in Montreal, actually, wasn't it? They played those in Montreal?
Yes. They were doing some preseason work north of the border. And
the home of the Rays.
Yes, the future home of the Tampa-Montreal Rays. And unfortunately, he had forgotten his passport. Everybody had fun with that because it was the joke was that he did not, that he intentionally forgot it, which I really don't think is true. I mean, I think sort of in the aftermath, it kind of became clear. I mean, it was pretty embarrassing. Like, he definitely did not mean for this to happen, but the joke was, well, he doesn't want to have to do extra preseason games, so he's going to stay home and rest. You know, he's essentially a guy who's a part-time player at the moment anyway, as they sort of monitor his injuries. So what's the point of going north? No big deal. And everybody was kind of having fun at the expense of Ryan Braun, but certainly a reminder to always pack that passport. Always know where it is if you're
going
to travel.
It's a great reminder for those listening that are going out of country. He's just like NBA free agents. He doesn't want to go to Canada.
Yes, it's very funny. My last thing, we'll round out the list with sort of a trend. This wasn't any one particular game, but just the way the Brewers pitchers hit the ball to open the season. Spotlight on Brandon Woodruff, who opened the season 5-for-5 with 2 doubles. He was used as a pinch hitter multiple times. I think at least 3 times this season. I know at least 3 times, maybe more than that. He's an actual bat in the lineup when he. I mean, he strikes out a ton, but he's a pitcher. Like, he's just really good for a pitcher. You know, you had Yoli Chacin homering on opening day. That kind of gets lost in the shuffle of all the fun things that happened in that game. But that was certainly an eye-opener. He's not normally known as a power hitter. Aaron Wilkerson had one big league at-bat, and it was a home run. He's had more since, but he... You know, he wasn't a batter in the minors. He wasn't a batter in college, you know? Like, he said the last time he picked up a bat and been a regular member of a lineup was in high school. And he hits a home run. Everybody was doing their job. You know, Zach Davies is a good bunter. I think Freddie Peralta had a big RBI single to keep a big inning alive against St. Louis at one point. I mean, it was just crazy how good the pitchers were batting this season. They have cooled off a little bit, but they're still on track to be probably the best hitting pitcher staff in Brewers history.
Yeah, Brandon Woodruff starting 5-for-5. That's crazy. How many times do hitters in the entire league go 5-for-5 in a game or over? You know, it just doesn't happen. And for Brandon Woodruff to do it when, like, his last at bat was probably not his last at bat, but, you know, the most very recently in your minds was the Clayton Kershaw homer. He had a pretty good stretch there.
Yeah, of course. Probably, I would say safely, the biggest moment involving a pitcher at the plate in Brewers history, coming in game 1 of the NLCS, when he, batting lefty of all things, takes Clayton Kershaw deep in a game the Brewers ultimately win. And he showed it was no fluke. He has handled the bat very well for himself. It's been fun to watch those guys hit.
Yeah, finally, something could surpass. Does the name Brett Myers ring a bell when we're talking about big pitcher at-bats in Brewers history? I'm sorry, I did it.
So you've just totally ruined the CC Sabathia juju by bringing that up. A walk from Brett Myers, not a hitter. Oh, my gosh. So other weird moments that we should mention. You know, we talked about that drop third strike May 22nd that helped the Brewers, that bounced off the backstop, helped the Brewers win a game. The fact that they struck out 24 times in that game against Houston, Justin Verlander, June 12th, and still won the game in 14 innings. I think that's probably it on my list. You have anything else?
So the fact that they hit 10 double plays in that Cubs game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was, they also gave up 10 runs to the Marlins. That's weird.
In one inning, 10 runs.
In one inning, yes.
Fascinating.
That's just wild and crazy and dumb and stupid.
Oh, you know what? One that we didn't think of was the play against the Phillies where Gio Gonzalez got caught into a weird rundown between third and home when there was a force at home. Help me out. I'm trying to remember that. That was during a Bucks game.
Yes, it was. I was outside. I was at the Deer District before game 1 against the Raptors. So the ball is hit to third, I believe, by Braun, and the bases are loaded. And Sean Rodriguez, like, it's an easy double play any way you want to go about this. You can step on third, throw home. You can step on third, throw to first. You can throw to second, then to first. Like, you can do anything you want. You can throw home and throw to first. There are literally 4 double play options for you. And he just freezes. Gio Gonzalez goes back to the bag. He's the runner at third. For some reason, he just doesn't know how to run the bases. So
Gio Gonzalez is going back to third. No offense, Gio, but, you know.
Yes. And Sean Rodriguez has an easier double play. Just step on third and then tag the guy or, you know, something. And then Sean Rodriguez freezes. And then, like, Lorenzo Cain is like pointing at Gio Gonzalez to go home, and that makes Sean Rodriguez realize, oh, I need to throw home. Although Lorenzo Cain was literally right in front of him and he could have tagged him. It was just wild. I don't know. It was the fielding version of Gene Segura trying to steal first.
Oh, that's an all-time moment. Gene Segura, who also, I believe, scored from first on a 3-run wild pitch against the Rockies. Just great times there. But yes, lots of weirdness, as there is every season. And I hope you enjoyed the rundown here, looking back at the first half. I know for Brewers fans, it's not an ideal spot to be in, only 3 games above 500. But I guess you just got to take heart in what the standings look like, knowing that if, you know, a team that gets in the playoffs, doesn't matter what record they have, they can make some damage, make some noise there. So that's what the Brewers are going to be focused on in the second half. And hopefully there's a lot more moments to add to our list. Kurt, this has lasted way too long, but I appreciate you joining me, man.
Yes, it has lasted way too long, much like the Brewers' current string of malaise. So, yes, thanks for having me. Always a good time on the podcast.
It's true. We'll catch you again real soon. Thanks, Kurt. That was a long one. A good look back at the first half of the Milwaukee Brewers season. Try to keep your chin up. You never know. I mean, there are many times the Brewers have been in much worse shape at the All-Star break, and there are times that they have been in better shape and it hasn't worked out. It's impossible to know. I really think it comes down to who gets hot, who goes on an 8-9 game winning streak. Right now, you'd say the Brewers don't look like a team that could pull that off. But I would say the same thing about the Cubs, the Cardinals. They don't look like teams that can pull that off either. You just gotta sort of have to ride it out, especially the way that with the trade deadline soon. You know, there's going to be some moves made. It'll be interesting to see if the Brewers really try to put their best foot forward and bring in somebody who's big time impact. They did make some pretty big moves last year. It's really kind of hard to know what they're going to do with the pitching situation, the offense struggling. It's hard to know where they're going to direct their attention, but it could be the difference. You never know. So the Brewers, a half game out of first place. Watch them in the All-Star game. They will be well represented in the All-Star game. 5 All-Stars, although we know Josh Hader isn't going to be pitching. Not sure on Christian Yelich's status yet, but you should be able to see, if nothing else, Mike Moustakas and Yaz Grandal get an opportunity there, and maybe Brandon Woodruff pitch a little bit as well. Thanks for tuning in. We always appreciate you listening to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Follow me on Twitter. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Find Kurt Hoge if you want at Kurt Hoge, C.Y.R.T.H.O.G.G. Yes, that's right, C.Y.R.T. Kurt Hoge. He's a preps reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but an all-around fun guy, knows his stuff when it comes to the other pro sports in town. Thanks for tuning in. We will chat with you again very soon.